Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
Our lineup on a Thursday remains the same, and every Thursday just after 4:05, we head downtown to City Hall and the Deputy Mayor's office. It's our great friend Mick Renheisen. Deputy Mayor, how are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm doing well, enjoying a sunny fall day with some very, very, about 10 degrees over normal?
Yeah, even more than that. 69 is the normal this time of year, so we are getting a little bit, a bit above that. And Mick, that should, we see the merge signs and the caution barrels and the alley of work getting done. We haven't had rain in 2 months. I hope everything that was scheduled is getting completed in record time here.
You know, there are two times of the year where you see the most orange barrels and the most people working. And we saw the first one back in the spring when the weather warms up and contractors can get out and the paving plants are open and the moisture content is, while still more than we've had it here certainly for a while, it's the beginning of construction season. And the other time is right now as we near the end of construction season. Mostly pavement projects are the ones that you start to think about as the paving plants can shut down sometime in November or December, depending on the weather. So there's a frenetic amount of activity going on for projects, which is great. This is employing a lot of people. It's getting a lot of work done. And when the weather's good, you make hay. You do as much as you can. And that's what I know all of our project coordinators and contractors are doing, as well as other private sector projects that are underway as well. So that means a lot of orange cones around the community.
Barrels and barrels and barrels of fun. And we see people just out of our window here atop High One City Center doing some sidewalk work on the corner of 7th and Walnut Street. And there's plenty of it going on. So that's the good news. And Mick, the forecast is great. We're trying to help the people downtown, the restaurant and merchants and everybody else with parklets and outdoor dining. We just hope if we picked the right time not to have any rain, I guess that would be the best way to put it.
Well, that's fair. I mean, so, you know, we've got enough complications in our world, and having a drought or conditions that we would normally not particularly like to see have silver linings. And the silver lining is more people still out and about trying to help our local restaurants and businesses survive the COVID pandemic and the lack of business that they can have because of the limitations on gathering sizes in their particular establishment. So we're happy that the parklets and the pickup drop-off zones and outdoor seating are all being utilized by our community, keeping them safe and distanced and still able to support local businesses in the offing.
We're speaking with Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And Mick, in our last hour, Mike and I were talking, the armory site for testing for COVID is closing down and the county is going to open a new one. They keep using the term downtown Bloomington. Do you know anything about where that might be, or have they talked to the city at all?
Yeah, and who's going to be operating it, Mick? Is it just OptumServe moving again, or if you have any details, we'd love to have you fill us in.
Sure. Well, it's actually a great partnership with, you know, the county is in charge of the health aspects of our community, so they lead in this aspect. And the site that is being identified is actually just across from the downtown Kroger. Would be just over the Beeline Trail to the west, just over Morton Street. The IU Health campus has some buildings that they're not utilizing now, buildings the city will be buying when the hospital turns the site over to us. One of those buildings that's not currently being used to its capacity is the location of the site. So that's very near downtown. It's literally right next to the downtown Kroger. It's being renovated by CARES Act dollars from the county, the city, the university, and IU Health. So it's truly a partnership amongst all of those entities with the county leading. They'll staff it. I don't know who's been selected as the testing site provider, whether Optum continues or it's a different entity. I do know the capacity will go up to 200 tests a day, which is great. And so that's the story. And they're in the process, the county, of leading the renovation of the space so it can open up. It's intended to stay open until next June. Of course, that's contingent on, let's hope for an optimistic view that we don't need it sooner than that, then it could go away. Let's hope we don't need it longer than that. But the discussion about what to do will transpire as we see the progress of the pandemic spread and the containment of that over the course of the next 8 to 9 months.
Yeah, I don't see. News. Yeah, great stuff, Mick, as always.
Thank you.
And the other thing is, as we get smarter with this, we've only been 6 months into it. June would be, 9 months from now. So we've seen how things have changed here so quickly. And the testing sites, you would think, Mick, that we'd like to have those until everybody can get a vaccine, because we're just going to have to figure out who has it and who doesn't have it until we can prevent it from moving on. So get comfy over there. But that's great that it is downtown and ready to go. So interesting that's all together. And that takes us to earlier in the week, the hospital redevelopment site. That's a perfect lead in there.
Yeah, that's a great segue. That is one of the areas that was being master planned. That's part of the 24 acres the city is purchasing from IU Health. And the master plan public forum that was held Tuesday night this week was well attended again. We had about 74 on Zoom and about another 10 on Facebook Live. The goal was to take and look at the refined master plan. And I just want to reiterate, what is a master plan versus an architectural drawing? The master plan sort of sets the uses on a site and generalizes that here are the things we think need to go here, and are these about the right sizes and character. They're not architecturally designed buildings or streets or anything about what will finally go on the site. Master plan sets the vision. Architectural plans later set the actual development and construction. The city is not going to build out everything that the master plan will have on its own. We could never afford to do it, nor should we. It's really a public-private partnership as the master plan comes to fruition. Remember that IU Health is not going anywhere from their current site until sometime late in 2021, and there will be a transition before they actually are able to demolish the buildings that they are required to demolish. The biggest of those is the actual hospital building. That's going to take a big chunk of 2022. So here we are sitting at the end of 2020 with ample time to get the master plan adopted and approved and plenty of public input, which we've been taking all along since late April and early May. And we hope to conclude that with a presentation to the City Council on November 18th. And even after that, some revisions are likely to continue to happen. This is a vision plan that will inevitably be impacted by the market conditions moving forward. And if anyone's got that crystal ball that knows how the world's going to be different when COVID ends, you can see the conundrum that anybody that's in the development world is trying to get their heads wrapped around. Will we need the kind of retail that we were used to before COVID? Don't know. So this master plan envisions some commercial space, a whole lot of housing, some public realm or community space. And it's trying to figure out, with help from the community, what's the right ratio and size and scale of those things in a kind of a visionary way. So that's where we're at. Really appreciate all of the comments we've been getting. We've had hundreds of people participate. This has been a very vibrant public engagement process from our community. We know that will continue. All of our information is on a website, Bloomington Hospital Site, all one word, bloomingtonhospitalsite.com. And all the archived presentations are there, all the renderings that will come up in the next 6 weeks or so before the presentation will go on there. All the questions that people have asked are on there, all the background information about the site, everything's on there. You can probably spend days diving through it all if one was so inclined.
Well, that's what we can do when the weather turns poorly. We can get in there and see what's happening. The Greenway was one of the three options those participating in these engagement sessions could choose. Well, that's exciting. We'll get into all the details of that as we move forward. When's that next meeting, Mick? Did I see November 18th? Is that what I saw?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to reveal sort of the more finely tuned plan from the last public comment to the City Council at a public meeting on the 18th. So that is the next open discussion about it. And then we hope to wrap everything up by the end of the year and have this vision master plan completed and, you know, readily available for people to take a look at. We are starting to, you know, narrow down the public feedback because you can't have it open-ended forever. You've got to take the consensus and move forward. And that's what we've been doing after each of the three public forums. So hopefully this fourth reveal forum on the 18th. Gets us pretty close to the finish line.
Mick, is there any more opportunity for people to do anything responding online?
Absolutely. They can go to bloomingtonhospitalsite.com and leave comments there. We've got a project manager, Kelly Boatman, that's taking those. We're answering questions. As we develop new materials, they're posted on that website that people can go in and comment and leave their thoughts about. So we are continuing to take that public input all the way up. And at some point, as they say in the classroom, you have to put your pencils down, students. You have to draw something that we can take forward from
close
here.
The blue book.
We haven't announced when that put your pencil down point is yet, but we're getting close to where we're going to have to kind of wrap up a lot of the comment period, knowing that there's always going to be refinements, but so that we can get it to the next stage on the 18th presentation, November 18th, that is.
We're speaking with Mick Reneisen, the Deputy Mayor of the City of Bloomington. Mick, I want to take you back a little bit in time to bring you to something, and you'll see in a second. Last year, as we were finishing up in spring, well, actually, it was finishing up winter, one of the things that we talked about on this program was whether there was a future for the leaf vacuuming in the community. And, you know, there's a few leaves starting to fall. And so where are we with the city's plans to do whatever they're going to do or not do?
That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that back up. We were just at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. In fact, I think it was March 8th, we were involved in a Bloomberg training grant that we won. This is a $160,000 grant where they're teaching our city staff how to go about a public engagement process to help solve community type problems. And March 8th was the day we were kind of getting ready to turn the page and get ready to go out and start to use these techniques with the public. And then COVID hit, like March 9th, 10th, 11th. All I know is the world changed those days. And it's never come back to quite the same since. So that kind of suspended our project. In fact, Bloomberg suspended their training program. They couldn't send people around to do the in-person training model that they use. And it was important to do it in person. So we just revisited it in the last couple of months with our innovation director, Dave Takid, and our team of innovators at the city. And we've begun to have several community conversations and have a pilot project that we're going to implement in a couple of neighborhoods. And all the idea generation was really from the public. Ways to better use the way we are currently collecting leaves, which is this huge vacuum, energy sucking way that we've done it for decades. It has its shortcomings, but it also has some advantages. Remember, the goal of removing leaves is not cosmetic, although some people think it is. It's to keep the streets passable and safe and the sidewalks passable and safe. Because when leaves mix with moisture and moisture mixes with temperature changes, then you have ice blocks, ice flows, and clogged drains, which cause sewer problems for the utilities department and road and traffic problems and bicycle and pedestrian problems for everybody else. So there really is a reason why the leaves have to go in some efficient collection process. We've always tried to jam that in when our street crews, which, as you all noted, are out there around the orange barricades doing other work while they can. And then when they can't do it anymore because the weather changes and the pavement plants are closed, we would move those same people into the leaf collection mode. Well, that doesn't always time well with Mother Nature dropping leaves. And there's a point where we have to stop collecting the leaves in that fashion, because now we have the same staff that have to go push snow off the road. So those complications have been in a part of this process for a long time, and we're just trying to figure out a better way to do it. We're also trying to figure out a way to save taxpayer dollars, to find alternative methods to collect or compost or not remove leaves, or suggest other ways people can remove them so we don't have to bring the big vacuum trucks in and, quite frankly, not meet our customers' demands, because leaves fall many, many months here. So it's not a perfect solution. So we're trying some new things to see what we can learn. Ideally, we'd have been way farther along the process had COVID not interrupted our innovation project. Nonetheless, we're going to try some things in a couple neighborhoods, and we'll see how it works and what doesn't. And we'll innovate and get better and try to modify the program moving forward. But nothing substantial that's going to save hundreds of thousands of dollars right off the bat, but steps to take to find out what might work to ultimately meet multiple goals of changing the way we do the leafing program.
So we're just going to do the leaves like we did last year?
For most people, yes.
Unless you get a special letter.
There is a possibility that we can implement some better ways of informing people when our leaf crews will be in your neighborhood. So if you know that and you can get out and get your leaves to the curb at the time when you know our trucks are coming and we're better at informing you exactly when that's going to be, that could be a change you could see in real time this year that might improve that connection to when do I have to have my leaves absolutely out there, because if I put them out too soon, they blow around. If I put them out too late, you've already passed me and we're unlikely to come back, right? We can do double trips sometimes, but we can't promise everybody we'll get around to every site twice.
Would you ever think about adding a pay-per-view option there, Mick?
Yes. Yes, that is one of the options being considered. There were, again, these came from residents.
Yeah, absolutely. People rake their leaves. They don't want them to sit there for a month. They want them to get them off their grass so their yard doesn't die. And I would think someone would pay whatever you'd ask them to do.
Call them and pay them to come and get them.
Yeah, if you can be here at 4 o'clock this afternoon, I'll pay $20 to get them out of here. And that could be some non-traditional revenue that, everybody needs this day and age.
We certainly, and see, there you go. The best ideas always come from the people in the real world that are using the services. They always can kind of tell you where you're missing the mark and what ideas they have. So, those were, I don't forget how many 30 some odd ideas we came. I mean, all kinds of things like, here's a funny one. I'll just share this one with you. Have goats come around.
There you go.
Eat the leaves.
And then
eat the leaves.
And Keith, you know what you need?
Eat anything.
You know what you need following the goats?
Stew.
Shovels.
Well,
there's the downside, among others, of goats around the community. But anyway, there were all kind of, suggestions, and those were weighed by the group of people involved, and some of those will be tried out. Not the goats, but some will be tried out this year.
Mick Renneisen is our guest. He's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And in the same theme of revisit, how are we doing as a city with those tubs to put our recycling and our garbage in? Is that working the way the city wanted it to work?
I think it is. I think what we have not been able to do on our end is we had another part of that project that was more of an inside baseball thing, and that was route optimization. That's a fancy phrase for how do we more efficiently plan our routes to, now that we know a little bit more about the volumes that we're picking up because of the chips that are in there that tell us, how much volume we're picking up in various places. And so we're learning enough from the data, but we have not been able to transpose that information due to some software challenges that, again, that's the inside baseball part that we'll eventually overcome. And then that may help us with the efficiency of our routes and have different routes than we've currently programmed into our pickup system.
I've heard that with the COVID, a lot of people are emptying out their place. Are you seeing that in your pickup stuff?
That is absolutely true. Our tonnage numbers have gone up, and we think it's a big part of the nesting that people are doing, spending more time at home. They're cleaning out their closets. They're eating more at home. So the refuse that would have been in the private sector haulers, restaurant dumpsters behind the restaurants, that's in people's private, it's in their personal trash now. So we're seeing more volume. We think those are some of the reasons why that volume has increased.
I'm getting fatter from COVID. I know that. Now, don't throw your stuff away. We talk to Lucy Shake almost every Friday from the City of Bloomington's Volunteer Network.
Right.
Go to the City of Bloomington's website, Volunteer Network, BloomingtonVolunteerNetwork.org. There are a million places in town that will be more than happy. They might even come pick it up for whatever it is. We can repurpose everything. We want to keep it out of the landfill. That's the best way to do it. But do that first. And I know that we'll get to... Another season passes, and we'll all clean the garages out and do everything else. So if you can keep it out of the landfill, that'd be great. That's my public service announcement today. Hey, Mick, contactless app-only parking to become available in two Bloomington locations. What are we doing there? I love when I throw him a curveball. I love when I throw you a curveball.
I'll have to look into the detail of that one.
It's Park Mobile. It's doing some stuff. North Walnut between 11th and 17th Street. North College between 11th and 17th Streets. North Walnut Grove from East 10th Street to East Cottage Grove Avenue, and East Cottage Grove Avenue from North Walnut Grove Street. So there you go. You can get on the Park Mobile app and do that. Why? It's a lot easier than having, number one, it's contactless. There's not going to be meters there and everything else that goes along with it. Bryson DeChambeau is playing in Las Vegas this week, Mick. The last time we saw him, he was trashing the USGA setup at Winged Foot. I will give you, I'll play a little trivia with you here for a minute. Let Keith get a little break. I used to play with Keith and ask him how many hits the Reds got there in the playoffs.
Two.
Boy, that was bad. Dick Williams fired yesterday, by the way. Bryson DeChambeau today in Las Vegas was out in the morning group. His first round after winning the United States Open. Did Bryson shoot A, 60, B, 62, C, 64, or D, 67?
62.
Nailed it. I can't get anything by him. I got the parking by him. That just came out 5 minutes ago. But that's right, Mick. 62 for Mr. DeChambeau. He is the leader in the morning wave in Las Vegas. Good field this week as guys, everybody's schedules turned upside down. This will be the first of two in Las Vegas as they will play at Shadow Creek. Are you familiar with Shadow Creek, Mick?
I am not. I'm not a Las Vegas visit tour, so I really don't know much. I watch some of the great golf courses on TV that they play, but I've not been out there myself.
That is the course where Tiger and Phil played the Skins game on Thanksgiving. And I think, Keith, if you'd like to play Shadowwood, you have to be an MGM Properties Platinum member where you play $25,000 a hand at blackjack. That's how you get on that course. Unless you want a caddy, Mick. That's probably another way you can get on it. Pick up a bag and haul it around.
Only way I'd get on there unless they have a volunteer tent that they need somebody to do something for them.
You're an expert in that field.
I got a question for the two of you. I've been reading in the paper about an amateur tournament going on at the IU course.
That was over the weekend, yes.
Was that a big deal with people coming in from all over?
The Golf Week Hoosier Amateur was at the Foul Course, Indiana University. And let's see, they had, I can reach into my – I know I took it out of my bag. I was the starter on Sunday, Keith.
Well, I heard you were announcing over there.
Because Renheisen wouldn't do it, they had to call me. They got to go to the end of the Rolodex.
Better choice.
It was cold, Mick, that's for sure. It was beautiful. The trees were nice. Competition was great. Erica Shepherd from Duke University in Center Grove or Greenwood or right up the street, she won the women's side. And Tommy Cole from Illinois won the men's side. There was probably 90 folks there total, wow. Keith. So, again, college golfers don't have a season. So they're looking to play different places. And Indiana University's foul course was set up by Lance Ringler and the Golf Week folks. And rave reviews on that, Mick. So have you been out there to play it yet?
I have. It's a fantastic layout. It looks nothing like the old IU course.
No, it does not.
And it doesn't play anything.
No,
like the old
no it does not.
And so it was great to see the young, great players talk so highly of the layout. And, you know, obviously any new course has a little bit of grow in that still has to happen. But the course has improved quite a bit since I saw it at the beginning of the year to recently. And it's just going to get better. But it's truly a championship course and something the community and I know the university should be proud of.
Excellent. And greens are running 13 on the weekend. Ooh. Just to let you, for golf fans, that's really fast.
That's really fast.
Really, yes. Really.
And they have a lot of undulations in those greens, which means if you just barely hit it too hard, it can be another 20 feet past your target easily.
And if you can't spin the ball like most of us amateurs, well, it's going to be a long, long day at the office. Speaking of long days at the office, I think we're ready for Celeste trivia, Keith. You feel like we haven't taken a beating here in a
we'll
few.
See. The weather's nice.
Long enough.
Like Henry Hill said in Goodfellas, everybody takes a beating every once in a while. So we're ready. Bring it on.
She's getting better.
Yeah, she's on to you guys. She makes it easy.
She's
for
not
you.
Listening to your compliments.
And easy is not a word in her vocabulary.
All right. Well, we are in a season of change.
Okay.
And what changes during the fall with how we deploy our apple product? It turns into something different than apple juice. It's a cider season, right?
Oh, but not that kind of cider. The cider, apple cider.
Cider, not hard cider.
That's right. Well, you can do both.
And since the cider mill season is in full swing in this time of the year for Indiana, that's what your trivia questions are about. So here's your first question. What baby-related event was performed with apple cider in the 14th century due to a lack of clean water? Was it A, feeding, B, bathing, C, baptizing, or D, birthing? What did they do with apple cider in the 14th century due to a lack of clean water?
I'm going to say bathing.
I'm going to say baptizing. I was going to go with birthing, but that seems that's a
feeding,
lot.
Feeding, bathing, baptizing, birthing.
I'll say birthing.
Neither of you.
There we go.
Baptizing
for Celeste.
Is it baptizing?
Baptizing.
Yes.
Yep.
That's I was on that one first. You gotta go with your gut.
Too little a use.
I gotta go
cider.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Just think about how much of a cider you'd have to have to do all those other things.
Here's a great second question then to follow up on Keith. That's so, such a little use of cider. But first, let me tell you that the practice of using apple cider fell out of fashion as more complex sewer systems improved water quality. So it took a while for them to figure that out. And then once they did, it's like, okay, we got water now.
It's like the guy that ate
sanitary water we can dump as opposed to apple cider.
That's like the guy that ate the first poisonous mushroom. How did you know it was poisonous? Well, that guy died over there when he ate one.
That's tough. Second question. Approximately how many apples does it take to make 1 gallon of apple cider? Is it A, 10, B, 24, C, 30, or D, 36?
I'm going with 36.
I'm going with Keith.
They're not
a gallon's
juicy.
A lot. Yeah. That's a lot of gallons. A lot of that's 128 ounces. Yeah.
Three dozen apples is the correct answer. It does take that many to create a gallon of apple cider. And by the way, just so you have some context for how many gallons of apple cider, actually cases of hard cider were sold globally in 2017, that was 21.5 million cases.
Wow.
So do the math on the apples it would take to produce that sometime in your leisure.
Lots of apples would be the answer.
Lots of.
Yeah.
D, yes, D.
Lots
more than I have the ability to comprehend without a calculator. All right, question number three. Which president who swore that apple cider was the key to good health lived the third longest of any U.S. president? Was it A, James Monroe, B, John Adams, C, William McKinley, or D, Harry Truman? Third longest and swore that it was because of apple cider.
John Adams died in his 90s, so that's going to be my answer.
How do you know that?
I had to write a paper on him back in school.
Well, I'm going with him, John Adams.
It's good to go with Glass when he came out strong with
that
answer.
Well, yeah, he wrote a paper on it.
He died
on July 4th along with Thomas Jefferson.
Well,
they didn't know that.
I would have known that then if I would have known.
Well, you're almost 90, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you left the door open. You got to walk right
in
there.
And I'm drinking cider now. So
there you go. And you're going to drink more than you were before.
By 36
seconds. John Adams, who lived to age 90. The only two that lived longer were Presidents Ford and Reagan, who both lived to 93.
That's not true.
What about Carter?
Jimmy Carter's 96.
Yeah.
That's true.
An additional
He's not passed away yet, so I guess he wasn't on that list.
Right.
So
we'll add to the list.
We'll give Celeste a break there. We don't want her on the bad side.
Yeah.
We don't want to get her angry.
Don't make her mad. You guys got two out of three right. There you go.
We should have had three out of three. I should have went with my gut on the first one. I did not. That's a bad job by me. Are you happy with the COVID numbers we're seeing drop Indiana University and here in Monroe County as well, Mick?
I am. I think we're all happy to see that they're going in the correct direction, which is they're getting less each week. Mm-hmm.
But here's the bad news. We just, two or three days ago, it was, 1495? That was the record, one-day record. Well, we were at 1488 yesterday. So that's for the statewide. So not everybody is playing by the rules. So we need to pay attention.
No, it's a very different story in different states, different parts of the country. I'm at the most, I'm most worried about Bloomington and Monroe County and the folks that live here and use our city services and interact with each other. I want to give them credit for largely there's compliance with mask ordinances and doing all the right things. And so, we're going to applaud that behavior and hope people will keep it up. It's hard. It's 6.5 months going on 7 into this. We don't know the end, but, just keep doing it because it's working locally. And you can only control so much. The things that we're doing here seem to be working. So let's keep doing it.